As you probably know, Holy Mother's birthday is Thursday. So the topic this week is on Holy Mother. And the title is The Timeless Value of Sri Sarada Devi's Life. This morning I want to talk about the ways Sri Sarada Devi's life has relevance to our lives. The gap between her time and ours is huge. She was born and raised in a rural Bengal village in the mid-19th century, about 170 years ago. The world was highly refined as far as philosophical subtleties were concerned. Even the most out-of-the-way village had its storytellers and maybe its pundits. The Hindu epics framed the Vedanta philosophy in their dramas. So the stories made everyone, including the illiterate, educated in scripture and philosophy. This makes these abstruse ideas available to people of all ages and occupations. So even the kids knew that even though there were many gods and goddesses all different, that was okay. Many accounts of their saints stress that they received religious instruction from their grandmothers and the Haridasa, or religious storyteller. Hearing these tales was the popular entertainment then, along with music. In the West, we're raising our children to Sesame Street and Paw Patrol. That's good material, but it's not subtle philosophy. But when it comes to just the plain material world, that was both refined and rustic. The handmade items of household use were often artistic and suitable, but the larger environs weren't. Food supplies were unreliable. The day was long with chores. There weren't any labor-saving devices, unless you count rustic machines for processing rice paddy. The weather was as it had been for millennia. It just had to be endured by the farmers and villagers without artificial cooling or heating. Monsoon flooding, insect pestilences, and droughts added to their hardships. Holy Mother's parents were simple and uneducated, but very advanced in spirituality. Her mother, Shyama Sundari, was able to see many gods and goddesses and regarded them as her own children. Her father was deeply devotional and highly respected by the villagers. He would walk miles to find special flowers for worship, wading into ponds to gather lotuses. If any parents deserved a daughter like Sarada, it was these two. It's a pity the rest of their children were nowhere near Sarada's caliber, but we'll get to that later. Holy Mother was left, as Sri Ramakrishna said, as a model for common people to follow. But how can a life lived so differently from our 21st century ones possibly have any relevant features? Our physical surroundings are buildings, cars, squirrels, sirens. We're surrounded by wall-to-wall news, most of it unsettling. We're facing global climate disasters, danger to democracy, rising income inequality, malaise among our young population, racial disharmony, war in Europe, a three-year-old pandemic, unsustainable use of natural resources, and all the other conflicts and disasters that we hear about. And of course, new ones pop up every day. People are always saying that the times we live in have never been so difficult, or divided, or any other negative descriptor you'd like to add. I always think, well, what about the Mongol invasions, the Black Death, or the World Wars? We're probably flattering ourselves that we're living in very difficult times. Nothing is as good as the good old days. But examining the good old days by 2022 standards would leave us musing over really just how good they were. For example, serving the unhoused. One local student has recently invented and funded solar-powered backpacks so the unhoused people here in San Francisco can charge their smartphones. This gives a little perspective. Unhoused people in previous times also lived in boxes and tents and begged for food just like now, but there weren't phones to keep charged. But good times are bad. We human beings have perennial challenges. So what do we have in common with Sri Sarvadevi? We also have family members, people we work with, our bodies and minds needing upkeep, and continual demands for our attention. We all need friends. We all want affection and connection. We all want to contribute to our human group. We're here in the Vedanta temple because we want to reach God. We want to go beyond all the teeny tiny pleasures of standard life, and of course beyond the miseries too. I recently saw a reference to Sri Shankara's prescription for spiritual life. He said the way to attain intuitive knowledge is to practice the means to this knowledge. His list of these means describes Sri Sarvadevi's life in a nutshell: renunciation, calmness, self-control, withdrawal of the senses, fortitude, and concentration. Sri Sarvadevi was the primo exemplar in all of these fields. She was able to be in touch with God while she dealt with family, with difficult people. That is almost the same thing in her life, since her family members won all the prizes for being troublesome. I'll also look at how she lived carefully and worked hard. I'll bring out stories of Holy Mother's well-known motherliness and her aversion to seeing faults. The quality that stands out that carried Holy Mother through all her difficulties, helping her withstand the unceasing pressure from her society, her family, her disciples and devotees, was patience. When we hear about what she faced and endured, we have to think, how did she do it? Even the medical care she was subjected to makes you shudder. She had to endure the branding treatment for spleen trouble, where a burning piece of wood was rubbed over the region of the spleen. And even her close disciples could be obnoxious. One of the young men attendants told her that her cooking was bland and boring. When she said she would use more chilies when she cooked for him, he said, "Well, even dishes without lots of chilies could be tastier." What a punk. It wasn't that Holy Mother showed uniform patience, but she never lost her patience completely, which was lucky for the perpetrator. Sri Ramakrishna told Hridoy that if Hridoy insulted Sarada to the point where she became angry, there would be no place for him in this world or any other. When she was growing up, Sarada was subject to the rigid social control exercised by the village elders. Girls were especially watched and their freedoms limited. As Swami Vivekananda said, the Indian peasant had excellent freedom of thought, but no freedom in social activities. After Sarada had been married to Sri Ramakrishna, the Jairambati villagers would constantly gossip. Mother quoted them, saying, "To whom have you given that girl in marriage? A crazy, insane man." Sarada's recourse was to keep to herself and avoid situations where she'd have to listen to these slanders. This is a good strategy. Why voluntarily hear negative things people say about us? The village elders also harassed Shyamasundari, Holy Mother's mother, as well. During the Kali Puja one year, one of the elders wouldn't accept their family's rice for the public puja because of some village feud, which caused Shyamasundari great anguish. Once in later days, one of Holy Mother's helper boys had to take over the preparation area for the Jagannathri Puja in Jairambati because the regular person got sick. Holy Mother told him, "That is nice. You will be able to do it. Today you get yourself acquainted with everything. Tomorrow, early in the morning, Take a bath and come to the preparation area. Perform all the work according to the village norms. Even the renowned Sister Nivedita was discouraged from visiting Holy Mother in her village. She told her, "No, my daughter, do not go there during my lifetime. They will expel me from the community." Holy Mother did not observe strict caste rules in her village house when she received devotees from various places, and that caused problems with the elders if they happened to become aware of it. Holy Mother tried to live under their radar, which can be the best response for these non-essential controversies. About work, Holy Mother had to work very hard from her childhood. She was the eldest child, the older sister to four brothers, Prasanna, Kali, Bharata, and Abhay. One younger sister and younger brother died before they reached adulthood. In her girlhood, she helped her parents with growing cotton and rice, and would help her mother pick their cotton and spin it into the sacred threads worn by brahmanas. She would wade neck deep into water to cut grass for the cattle. She would carry puffed rice to the fields as snacks for workers. She helped her mother husk paddy by operating the husking machine. Sarada helped her father during a terrible famine in their district. Her parents had stored the previous year's rice harvest in a bin, and instead of hoarding it for his own family, her father arranged to have that rice cooked with lentils for the starving people who came to them for food. Pot after pot of khichdi would be prepared. It would be doled out on leaf plates. An 11-year-old Sarada would fan it to cool it enough for the people suffering awful hunger pangs. She herself suffered hunger when she lived in Sri Ramakrishna's hut in Kamarpakur after he passed away. She was out of sight, out of mind for his disciples and devotees, and Sri Ramakrishna's family on the spot there neglected her. Her work helping her family feed the starving, was a harbinger of Sarada's lifelong delight in feeding people. She cooked for Sri Ramakrishna and his devotees, and later for her own disciples and devotees. When Sarada stayed at Dakshineshwar to attend on Sri Ramakrishna, she famously lived in the lower part of the music tower, the Nahabat. Sri Ramakrishna's mother lived on the floor above during her lifetime, often calling out to Sarada for help since she was old and infirm, and Sarada would drop everything and run to take care of her. Sarada's living space in the Nahabat was a tiny, below ground level, octagonal in shape, and crowded with pots and pans, with pots overhead holding live fish splashing. With all those buckets of fish, it was lucky the ceiling was 9 feet high, but the ground space was only about 7.5 feet in each of the eight directions of this octagonal space. If you can visualize the basketball player Yao Ming lying down, that would be the dimension of the room. The doorway was too low to enter standing up. It was only a tiny bit over 4 feet high. That's about the height of an 8-year-old girl. Holy Mother had to bend down, going in, going out endlessly. In that tiny space, she cooked for the master and his devotees, sometimes for up to dozens of people. She had to make chapatis for all of the devotees visiting the master, sometimes using up to 9.5 pounds of flour. She prepared countless betel rolls, boiled down the milk for the master, prepared his soup. Mother lived in that constricted space, practicing her spiritual disciplines. She advised her devotees later that while the rice was cooking, she took that chance to repeat the name of God. Naturally, she also meditated and practiced japa, several hours in the early morning and late at night. She got up from bed at 3 a.m. and retired at night around 11 p.m. Out of modesty, she chose to go out extremely early in the morning to use the facilities and bathe in the Ganges before any of the other temple workers were up and about. That austerity alone would be impossible for any modern person. Yet later, Holy Mother told her disciples, "At that time, I always felt as if a jar of bliss, full to the brim, was set in my heart. It is impossible to describe that divine joy." When Sarada was about 21, her father died. This plummeted her mother and brothers into much worse poverty because that ended the scant income from her father's priestly duties. Sarada helped her mother run their tiny farm and also helped run the husking machine for a rich neighbor. That earned them a quarter of the rice they husked. When her brothers were farmed out to different relatives to be educated, Sarada returned to Dakshineshwar so she wouldn't burden her mother. Her sensitivity and situational awareness are certainly a model for all times. As a worker, Sarada Devi was careful and artistic, with an eye for detail. One day, one of her attendant boys was laying out sal leaves to serve as dinner plates. He shook them and sprinkled a little water on them. Mother stopped him. "Oh no, my boys will be having their food. Wash the leaves well, or else they'll still be dusty." "When I was well, I used to wash the leaves one by one and wipe them with a piece of cloth." Another day he was placing the asanas at mealtime. Holy Mother was watching from the veranda next to her room. She said, "They're not placed straight." He rearranged them a little. And she said, "Not straight yet." He couldn't figure out what was still wrong, so she came and fixed it herself. Then he saw that all the asanas had been placed parallel to each other, equidistant, their fronts presenting a straight line. This was representative of her conscientiousness. At Dakshineshwar, Mother once made an exquisite garland of jasmine blossoms for the goddess Kali. She made the garland and kept it overnight in a bowl of water with a damp towel over it. All the jasmine flowers opened perfectly. She had a servant give it to the priest at the Kali temple. When Sri Ramakrishna saw the beautiful, fragrant white garland against the dark form of the goddess, he was overwhelmed with ecstasy and was pleased to hear that Sarada had made it. Her attendants reported that that was how she operated. She would put her whole focus on the task at hand, attending to things as they came. The Bhagavad Gita calls this dexterity in action. Once in Jairambati, a new brahmachari fixed her niece's diet, but didn't carry the bowl right and dropped it because it was too hot. Later, Mother said to his brother brahmachari, "Look, that boy is good as a monastic, but here, how will things function without a competent person who is not only alert, but efficient in all jobs? My work here cannot be discharged by an ascetic sitting under a tree." Also, under temporary enthusiasm, many do wonderful work. But the real personality can be known by observing the commitment and respect with which they discharge their daily duties. In January 1906, Holy Mother's own mother died. Holy Mother had to work hard to arrange the Shraddha ceremony. One of her young attendants was dispatched to Kolkata to bring back 3 bullock cartloads of goods: brass water pots, umbrellas, wooden sandals, and straw asanas. She had to distribute these with great finesse, considering the temperaments of the villagers. Holy Mother also prepared plenty of pumpkin curry for the guests, which included both Brahmanas and non-Brahmanas. It took nearly a month for her to recuperate. Holy Mother had just turned 56. Throughout her entire life, Holy Mother was always engaged in spiritual practice and work. She advised her devotees to always keep busy with one or the other. Of course, the best thing is to combine the two by dedicating our work so our every task is also spiritual practice. Otherwise, I have to remind myself, poking around on the internet does not constitute keeping busy under Holy Mother's guidelines. Even those who live alone still have to deal with other people. We have co-workers and neighbors, if not family. Dealing with other people takes most of our emotional energy, and we would be hard-pressed to find a family more dysfunctional than Holy Mother's. Her brothers were small-minded. They were always on the lookout for which one of them might be getting preferential treatment from her. Devotees would bring her gifts and supplies, and the brothers watched closely to see how those were distributed. One day, Swami Saradananda said to one of her attendants named Rash Bihari Maharaj, "Look, Mother will go to Jairambati soon. You and Ashok pack all of her belongings." Swami Saradananda had gotten a nice new mosquito net for Mother to use at Jairambati. The two attendants packed her things, including the mosquito net. When they reached Jairambati a couple days later, the two attendants put all her luggage in her room and went to the parlor, the room where they would be staying. Slowly, Mother started to unpack her luggage. In the meantime, Holy Mother's younger brother, Uncle Kali, had gotten news of her arrival and had come to see her. When he saw the brand new mosquito net, he said, "Sister, you have to give me this mosquito net." He didn't wait for her to say anything. He snatched it and went to his room. Mother watched the whole thing silently. After the evening vesper service, Ashok Maharaj and Rash Bihari Maharaj came to make Mother's bed and put up the mosquito net. Mother just stood there quietly. They looked through all of her stuff, but couldn't find the net. They kept asking Mother about it, but she kept quiet. Finally, she had to explain. "My son Kali wanted it, so I gave it to him." Rash Bihari Maharaj suspected otherwise and said, "Mother, Sharan Maharaj got it for you, and you didn't use it even once. What will he think?" Mother said, "Sharan will not mind. You put up the old net for me now." The attendants made her bed with the old mosquito net and left. When they went out, they saw Uncle Kali again coming toward Mother's room. They ran over to him and grabbed his hands and said, "Uncle, where is Mother's mosquito net?" "Sister gave it to me." "No, she didn't. You took it away. Give it back." Then Kali started screaming, "Oh, Didi, your attendants are about to kill me." Mother immediately came out of her room and stepped into the courtyard. Uncle Kali freed himself from the two boys and ran to his own room with the boys after him. Mother called them back, saying, "You are monks. Practice renunciation and dispassion. Fighting over a mosquito net does not become you." The boys were probably not that focused on the mosquito net per se, but the way her brother brazenly grabbed it was galling. One of the attendants said that it was quite amazing how Mother kept her relatives under a veil of ignorance. This is why they did not recognize who she really was. They were fascinated by seeing many notable people visiting her, taking spiritual guidance from her, and worshiping her. But they didn't understand her real nature. She kept them happy with money and other trifling things. Her brothers were so competitive that they wouldn't even come to her aid by sending helpers to get her across the river on the way to Jairambati when she was returning home. Someone pointed out that the brothers had known of her arrival, but still didn't send help. Mother asked her brother Prasanna about it. "Why didn't you send a man to help me cross the river? My children," meaning the disciples, "accompanied me. You didn't go yourself, and you didn't send anyone else." Prasanna said he coughed out because he was afraid of his brother Kali. "He might complain that I was trying to win you over to my side. Do I not know who you are and what these devotees are? I know everything, but I'm helpless. Please bless me that I may have you as my sister in my future births also. I don't want anything else." Mother said, "Do you think that I shall be born again in your family? I have had enough of it this time." Sri Rama once prayed, "Never may I be born again of Kaushalya." "And to be born in your family again? Our father was a devotee of Rama and always helped others. Our mother too had such a kind heart. That is why I was born in this family." Mother's fourth very promising brother named Abhay suddenly died of cholera while he was enrolled in med school, about 6 months before his widow gave birth to a daughter. This posthumous child was the famous Ratu. Sri Ramakrishna had supplied this distraction to Holy Mother. After Sri Ramakrishna died in 1886, Holy Mother had no interest in life at all. She couldn't find any reason to go on living when the entire focus of her human life had been her beloved husband and master. She was praying to depart from this world. Many years passed this way. Her companions couldn't interest her in anything, not even conversation. She was in ecstatic moods, her mind focused on her real nature. Finally, in 1900, she had a vision of a 10-year-old girl moving around in front of her. The master appeared and pointed to the girl, saying, "Take her as a support and live. Many spiritual seekers will come to you." Ratu's mother, Abhay's widow, lost her own mother in her childhood. And then soon after her husband, Abhay, died, her aunt and grandmother, who had brought her up in place of her mother, also died. This unbalanced her mind for the rest of her life, and she was unfit to care for her child. Holy Mother took over the care of Ratu, but Ratu's own insane mother saw that as her child being stolen from her. Ratu's mother's name was Surabala, but she was referred to as the mad aunt, Pagli Mami. This sister-in-law made Holy Mother's life a constant turmoil. Sometimes her antics were sort of funny, and at other times they were dangerous. Once Pagli Mami wanted to play cards with Mother. Mother hesitated, but she agreed when the aunt pleaded by touching her feet. "You dragged me into this," Mother said. "We still need two more to join us." The aunt suggested Nalini, another of Mother's nieces, and Ashu, an attendant. When Ashu walked into the room, he found all three sitting on a mat, ready to start. He told Pagli Mami, "Mother and I are a team. I won't join anyone else." Holy Mother agreed to this partnership. As soon as Mother and Ashu were dealt a good hand, Pagli Mami got annoyed. After losing five times, she got mad and threw the deck of cards into the air and left the room in a huff. "What's the use of playing with you two? You and Srima will always win. We will always be the losers." Mother replied, "It is we who are sattvic and are playing correctly. Do you think you will be the winner and not us?" In the distance, they heard the aunt say, "Yeah, yeah." But once the mad aunt got really out of control, in an argument with Holy Mother, she picked up a stick of firewood and was poised to hit Holy Mother with it. Mother screamed for help. "Who is there? Oh, Bharata, come quickly. This mad woman is about to kill me. Hurry up." Hearing her scream, the attendant rushed in and saw the mad aunt with the stick. He grabbed it and pushed her outside and rebuked her strongly. Holy Mother was disconcerted and said, "You mad woman, do you understand what you are about to do? That hand of yours will fall off." Then realizing what she had just said, Mother said, "Oh, Master, what have I done? What to do now? My lips have never, ever cursed anyone. Finally, this also has happened. Why live anymore?" The attendant noticed that tears were rolling down Mother's cheeks. And it so happened that at the end of her life, the mad aunt's fingers fell off because she got leprosy in that arm, and then shortly after she died. Pagli Mami's daughter Ratu was herself pretty unbalanced. When she was married, she was sort of soppy over her husband, watching him constantly. She developed nervous debility and exhaustion. Her exhaustion prevented her from taking care of herself, but she still had the energy to abuse Holy Mother. When Holy Mother tried to get Ratu to feed her child at the right time, Ratu said, "May you die, and I shall light your funeral pyre." After she gave birth, Ratu was prescribed opium for stomach trouble. She once threw a large eggplant at Holy Mother because Holy Mother didn't give her opium immediately when she wanted it. The vegetable hit Holy Mother on the back very hard, and her back became red and swollen. Mother looked at the photograph of the Master and prayed, "Master, please forgive her. She is not sane." Then to Ratu, she said, "Ranti, the Master never hurt me, not even with a rude word, and you torture me so much. How can you understand where I really belong? Simply because I live with you all, you do not think anything of me." Ratu burst into tears, and Mother said, "Ranti, if I lose my temper, there will be absolutely no refuge for you anywhere in the three worlds." There are many books written about Holy Mother's life and many reminiscences by her companions. They are full of accounts like these, amazingly awful behavior by her relatives. Among her devotees, some were well-behaved and others were dreadful. Her attendants were sometimes amused and sometimes repelled, but Mother showed steady earnestness to fulfill everyone's wishes. She was patient, calm, and affectionate under all circumstances. Her singular desire was the welfare of all. She would say to them, "You are all too young to understand the depth of sorrow and agony of human beings. You might understand a little when you grow up, but then you are not a mother." Holy Mother's endless patience is a model that we can only strive for. Mother's lifelong prayer was to not see the faults in others. She told her disciples, "Previously, I too perceived so many faults in people. Then I prayed to the Master again and again with tearful eyes, 'Master, I cannot bear to see any more faults in people.' And finally, I was spared the tendency to find fault in others. And look, if you perform 1,000 good acts to mankind and then commit a single error, they will turn their faces away and forget all your good deeds. People only see faults. How many notice virtues? One must recognize people's virtues." We all have to deal with difficult people. In fact, sometimes we're the difficult people. It's always safe to assume that if we find someone annoying, they find us even more annoying. There's a famous quote from a comic strip in the 50s called Pogo. Pogo says, "We have met the enemy, and he is us." Picking faults in other people confers a sort of tight, constricting delight. It's easy to fall into, but it's such a total denial of our own real nature and the divinity of other people. When Swamiji made the rules for the monastic order, he specifically stated that the brothers should not gather in a room and gossip away the hours. Holy Mother's very well-known advice, known as her final message, was to not find fault with others, rather see our own faults. Swami Ashokananda used to say that we should consider everyone else to be perfect. We alone are imperfect. He explained that if we see faults in other people, it's because our own mind is defective. And seeing through that defective filter, why wouldn't we see defects? The discipline of correcting our childish mind whenever it wants to play in the dirt will make us so much happier than indulging in looking for flaws. Holy Mother told some schoolgirls visiting her, if they scold, do not say anything in return. In the world, so many kinds of people are there. We have to put up with all of them. The master used to say, sha, sha, sha. He alone who endures will survive. Swami Sarvagatananda tells the story of Swami Tarakeshwarananda, a disciple of Holy Mother, who went to Mother when he was a young student. At some point, he committed a mistake that he bitterly regretted. He went to pay obeisance to Mother for one last time and to take leave of her, since he felt he was no longer deserving of her grace. She held him by his shirt and said, my child, when your mind gets low, think of me. Later on in life, he took up monastic world and was practicing tapasya in Hrishikesh. He went to the river very early one morning. From a distance, a guard thought he was a deer and shot him. He was pretty badly hurt. When the guard came closer, the Swami recognized him and asked him to leave. He was afraid that the local people might come and attack the guard. The police tried to find out how he got shot. He just said, I know who fired the shot, but I won't tell you. He finally died of the gunshot wound in the order's hospital in Kankal. Swami Sarvagatananda says, he was a true disciple of the Mother. He couldn't find fault with anyone. How could Swami Tarakeshwarananda do that? How could he overlook being actually shot with a gun? If a devotee has taken refuge in God, then everything that befalls him or her comes from God and is welcome as a gift from God. Holy Mother's mission on this earth, guided by Sri Ramakrishna, was to shepherd his monastic order and lift up human beings from their misery. She did not give birth to children of her own, but every living being was her child. She once told Ratu that she felt compassion for even insects. When the mother was staying at Jairamati, there was a particularly bothersome cat who kept sneaking into the kitchen to steal food. One day a disciple thought she would take care of business by picking up the guilty cat and throwing it out of the compound. Holy Mother was in tears at seeing the hard treatment the cat received. And when it didn't come back for a few days, Mother was on the lookout for it, ready to give it food. She was worried that it might starve to death. She said, after all, why should we condemn the cat for stealing food? It's in his nature to steal. And now that we've driven him away, how will he survive? He cannot work for his living. And when the cat finally returned, the mother was not only relieved to see him, but actually glad. One of her attendants was a resident at the ashrama in Koalpara, a few miles from Jairamati. He made a delivery to Jairamati, then wanted to go back. Mother asked him to wait, since the sky had become threatening. He insisted on going anyway. Part way to Koalpara, a terrible horse hailstorm let loose, and he got bad bruises and bleeding feet. The next morning, Mother's maid from Jairamati arrived with a letter from Mother asking about him and saying that she had spent the whole night in anxiety. A few days later, Mother said to him, "You stubbornly left without listening. I am the one who suffered from anxiety and worry. You left without paying heed to my advice, fearing that you would get scolded by your teacher. Am I a stranger? If you do not listen to me, it is I who suffer. You must listen to whatever someone tells you from the bottom of their heart." Holy Mother had a woman's form, but the loving expression of a mother is not restricted to women only. Men, too, have the same instincts and can be every bit as maternal as a woman. Swami Saradeshananda, one of Holy Mother's attendants, told this story. He went to visit a friend after a long time. The friend was a doctor, about 40 years old, with a good practice and reputation. After having two boys, he was blessed with a daughter who was then about a year and a half old. The doctor was a fastidious type, with his clothes always spick and span. Seeing the Swami, he came running over and they started talking. His daughter toddled over and raised her arms. He bent down, picked her up, and kissed her. He said, "For her sake, I have had to give up everything, even my fastidiousness about dress. She will never accept a no. The minute she sees me, I have to immediately pick her up in my arms. When I come back from my visits, I am not allowed to change clothes. She may be playing in the dirt, but when she sees me, she will come running, and I have to pick her up then and there. Otherwise, she'll bring the house down with her cries. I managed to keep myself away from my two boys. They couldn't get onto my lap, but I couldn't save myself from her." As he was saying all this, the doctor's eyes were fixed on his daughter. He was embracing and kissing her again, the joy of his heart shining in his face and eyes. Who wouldn't see this as a mother's soft heart? By remembering Holy Mother's endless patience and concern for all her relatives and disciples, we can soften our own attitudes with the people in our lives. Holy Mother was the embodiment of the Divine Mother. As such, her nature was Shakti, power. Yet this infinite power was held in full restraint. She manifested her immense power by restraining it. Sometimes devotees even injured her so she would remember them. Her family members abused and mistreated her. Yet Holy Mother's response was, as Sri Shankara advised, calmness, self-control, fortitude. We don't have infinite power, but we have the gift of remembering her motherliness. Swami Prabhavananda, the former head of the Southern California Vedanta Society, said this about her. Holy Mother had a unique characteristic. Whoever saw her felt that she was their own mother. I have asked many other people and found that they also felt the same way. This recalls the second part of Holy Mother's last message. After she advises the devotee to see her own faults and not others' faults, she says, "No one is a stranger, my child. The whole world is your own."